Bucks fans, we've got a special episode here for you today. The Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, Tom Lang. You remember listening to them during football season here at JoeBucksFan.com. Well, they are also the kings of ESPN Tallahassee Radio. And what we have here for you today is a giant chunk of their show from yesterday, where, of course, they're diving deep on all kinds of Bucks subjects. And Tom Brady is the talk of the entire sports world. And Jeff and Tom are huge Buccaneers fans, as so many of you know. So Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com joins them coming up, and sit back, enjoy. And we also, of course, pledge and hope that you will enjoy our local sponsors at JoeBucksFan.com. This is a tough time for local businesses. Bill Curry Ford, we love them. BillCurryFord.com. They have one-on-one appointments available and a giant showroom so you can keep your distance. And of course, everything is clean and sparkling over there. And the interest rate deals are phenomenal. Big Storm Beer, their tap rooms are open for business, and takeout business is available. Their kitchens in Odessa and in Clearwater. And you can just order food and they will bring it out to you. Check them out, bigstormbrewery.com. Enjoy the guys and stay safe out there.
Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody. This would be the Jeff Cameron Show right here on 97.9 ESPN Radio. Thanks so much for tuning to it. I hope you're doing well out there. Hanging in there. It's a lot of time to spend together, isn't it? Take a deep breath. We're online, ESPNTallahassee.com. That's where you go to listen live via the streaming free always. You can email us if you like, JCS at 979ESPNradio.com. Twitter, it's at Jay Cameron Show. WTSM app, good for mobile devices. Not on YouTube today. Skeleton crew around these parts means it's me and Tom talking. But what an hour this is going to be. In mere moments, I will step aside here very quickly in this first segment because we're going to go long form with Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, the website, of course, that he runs along with his business partner, Steve, and talk about Tampa Bay and the Tom Brady signing. It is an all-time moment for the franchise. Now, we'll just find out whether that is going to be an all-time great moment for the franchise or dubious one in which the next 10 years were imploded because they're starting over with an old man, albeit arguably the greatest player that's ever played the game of football. Does he have a little magic still left in that arm? It was the decision the Denver Broncos made when they brought Peyton Manning in.
Yeah.
And for a year, he did have a little magic still left in those numb fingers to distribute the football in a way that looked eerily reminiscent of a fully healthy and in the prime of his career Peyton Manning. Does Tom Brady have that season in him? If he does, and we just didn't get a chance to see it because the roster in New England was depleted, then great. The Bucs are going to the Super Bowl, baby. And it's all worth it at that point. If he doesn't, if he's the guy who had his highest incompletion rate and accuracy percentage of his career, off-target percentage of his career, which he did, then you got problems. Then you started over with an old coach who's on the verge of being washed up and will be run out of Tampa. You'll have to hit the reset button and start over, and you will have lost, inarguably, an immensely talented young quarterback along the way. So, you know, you're playing with fire, but there's an opportunity here, and the Bucks have made it abundantly clear what they chose to do. They anteed up. The chips have been moved to the center of the table. And you only do it if you believe your defense is a championship-level defense and that you're a quarterback away, maybe a quarterback and an offensive lineman and free agency away, from making a run to win a division, get it into the playoffs, and certainly arrive in the Super Bowl.
As if the last week wasn't depressing enough, you had to have yesterday. I might be in the minority, but I don't care. I don't like it. I feel like you're going half-cocked for a Super Bowl run instead of, you know, expanding a window for 5 or 6 years of success. I think Bruce was a little bit affected by his age. I've only got a couple of years left, so let me find this guy and let's make a run of it the next 1 or 2 years.
Yes.
And I just don't see an exit strategy plan if you don't win the whole thing. Because now going 10-6 or 11-5 and making the playoffs isn't good enough. So you've gone from 0-60, and the chances that we're going to win the Super Bowl in an era where Patrick Mahomes is here, like that, like turning around our roster like that, overcoming what San Francisco is, we're not the favorite in the NFC. We need to do 4 or 5 more things in order to become the favorite in the NFC over San Francisco.
I don't know about 4 or 5 things. I think that our defense is going to be elite next year. And I think there's an opportunity to find a lineman or two that allow you to run the ball and throw off a play action, which Brady has been deadly at doing, and you have two elite weapons. And at some point, you got to utilize your tight ends here. They're a lot. This is an interesting conversation. I think they're close. I do agree with them on that. I think they believe, obviously, they're close. I don't disagree. I think they're close. I think they can win the division. I thought that if they had some injury luck and a few fewer turnovers last year, they could have won the division. Now, some of that was Jameis, obviously. Some of that was O.J. Howard can't hold on to a pass 5 separate times and just threw it inexplicably into other people's hands. Or you had the miscommunication between a quarterback and his receivers as they learn a new offense. So how much of it falls, where the blame goes, all of that has been hotly debated and contested for some time now. It is a moot point, though, moving forward, because Jameis Winston is not going to be a Buccaneer. Tom Brady is. That offense will be Tom Brady's offense. It is not going to be the offense that you saw the Bucs run last year. At times, to great effectiveness, over 5,000 yards passing and 33 touchdowns tells you that. I am fascinated to see how this works out and what version of New England's offense we get from Brady when he comes in to tell Arians what we're running.
Chances are we need to win 1-score games to go where we want to go. I don't trust this coaching staff to deliver in the margins where we need to win these 1-score games. We have a psycho for a head coach.
Well, I also don't trust my kicker to make kicks when I have to win 1-score games. Dumbass, at the end of the year, lost the Falcons game, not Jameis, our kicker.
Add that to the Giants game when the season was...
Yeah, those are 2 wins right there, and you got a winning record. No, I know.
Referees in Tennessee. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. All right, let's step aside. Let's go straight to it. The remainder of this hour is me and Lee DeKemper, along with Tom, talking about Buccaneer football.
With funeral music in the background.
It'll be fun. Here we go. You hear the music, you know that's my man Lee DeKemper's theme song, at least on this show. I think he embraces it. JoeBucksFan.com, the website. We're all reading it feverishly these days. Maybe I shouldn't use that word. Feverishly.
With great passion.
Zeal.
Or a broken spirit. Yeah. Which one?
One or the other. Sometimes it vacillates between the two. I'm all at once buoyed by the idea of an iconic figure taking over at quarterback, perhaps the greatest player the league has ever known, arriving in Tampa Bay of all places. You know, that's just as somebody who grew up down there, we don't get those kinds of treats. We don't typically have the league's most iconic player, maybe ever, right, playing in a Bucs uniform. And on the other hand, I'm sad because I feel like we're moving away from a guy that would have played much better in terms of the interceptions next year in year 2 of the system. I'm a little worried we're starting over. It's all those things. We got a lot to talk about, so let's welcome him in right now. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com. Hey, Lee, how are you, brother?
All right, Jeff, thank you. And yes, I do embrace classic Van Halen, okay. Very much so.
Good.
And the word feverishly, that's a dicey word these days.
Yeah, I realized it as soon as I said it. But that's okay. We'll soldier on and put our fears behind us for a segment and talk about some of the fears and upshots of the football field and the signing of Tom Brady to be the Bucs quarterback. On the one hand, let's just look really big picture here, and then we'll zoom into some of the finer details later. And if we do that, I think we start by saying, what a day for the franchise. What a unique situation it is for Bucks fans everywhere who've been tried and true, and I'm talking about to the diehards right now, to see a figure like Tom Brady, who I alluded to earlier a moment ago as iconic, because that's exactly what he is. And, you know, to have a Hall of Famer come to Tampa and to be here to play with the Bucks, it seems rather remarkable. It seemed highly unlikely. It seemed like a pipe dream months ago when the rumors were out there that it was a distinct possibility. I didn't really begin to truly kind of wrap my mind around the idea and believe it had a measure of truth to it until maybe even a week ago. Lee, when did you start to get the sense that this could happen and that, in fact, it was likely to happen?
Well, when I thought it, you know, obviously that all began at the Combine. When my co-conspirator at JoeBucksFan.com, Steve Isbitz, I was there as well at the Combine in Indianapolis, and Arians was, you know, openly talking about getting a new quarterback. And, you know, after Arians was at the podium at the Combine, and there's a sidebar session that most coaches and general managers have with their local media. And so there was a little scrum with Arians at a sidebar after he got off the podium with the Tampa Bay media. And Steve asked, Arians kept talking about door number two, we're going to look at a quarterback, door number two. And Steve asked him point blank, he said, if you could pick up a phone right now and call one quarterback to come and play for you next year, who would that be? Arians didn't blink an eye. Tom Brady. Whoa. And then technically, Arians was tampering when he said he violated NFL rules. Whether he got fined or not, we may not know. But that took everybody by surprise and made headlines across the nation in the NFL media that Arians bunched Tom Brady. So that's when it first really got on the radar. And the more people were talking about Brady might leave the Patriots. Like, do the Bucks have a chance? Now, I even wrote on JoeBucksFan.com a couple times that I thought me being in Tampa Bay, Brady being in New England, I had no inside information on this. I suspected Brady would pick one of three places. It would be Los Angeles with the Chargers. It would be Las Vegas. It would be Miami. Specifically for non-football business decisions.
Correct.
Specifically his wife.
Correct, yeah.
People don't know his wife happens to be a supermodel. And, you know, the fashion industry, and, you know, obviously there's not much modeling work for, you know, 30-something, 40-something-year-old models, but that doesn't mean they can't continue to work specifically in Hollywood. And, oh, by the way, this past week, it came out that Brady launched his own Hollywood production company with some heavy hitters in Hollywood. So even at that time, about a week ago today, I still thought Brady would likely go to one of those three destinations, probably the Chargers, because, again, non-football business decisions. But this started picking up steam, I guess, when I thought the Bucks had a prayer. It's basically when the Chargers pulled out. When it came down to it was out there that the Bucks were a finalist. I know there was a guy for Yahoo Sports that basically, 24 hours ago, put out a video that said, well, the Bucks and the Chargers aren't the only finalists. There's other teams, and that proved out to be BS. And then people are claiming I wrote that. No, I didn't. At any rate, it started looking like it might be a reality maybe 30 hours ago when it came close to, you know, it's a Chargers, Bucks, and a Chargers, the Bucks. And someone with the Chargers, probably knowing Brady wasn't coming, leaked out to a couple of NFL sources that, no, we're not getting Brady. Then it looked like, wow, this actually might be a reality. So it picked up a lot of steam in the last couple of days. So that's when it became a reality for me. With, you know, not quite a day ago, maybe 30 hours ago, it looked like that was going to happen.
Understanding that this is a completely unfair characterization of the city of Tampa, but being from Tampa and growing up in Tampa, St. Pete, friends of mine, also from Tampa, were having fun during this process of talking about the possibility of Tom Brady and his wife Giselle living in Tampa. And my buddy, who loves Tampa, so it's a little bit like, making fun of one of your own, said, Giselle's not moving to Tampa Bay. It's a carjack waiting to happen. No chance in hell she's going to live in Tampa. And we were laughing. I thought at that time, that's not completely unfair. Like, She is a supermodel. New York, Los Angeles, Miami, those places make sense. Tampa? Maybe not so much. There's an element of road hard, put up wet in Tampa that I don't think she would really embrace. And so I've got...
Penelope Park, are you speaking of?
Maybe. There's some things. Just, you know, there are places. We all know where they are. Pockets of Tampa that...
Defner?
Pockets of Tampa in the surrounding areas that may be looked upon with a jaundiced eye by most.
Palmetto? Hudson?
Areas are centering around Tampa.
Hudson is a good one.
Hudson's a good one. yes.
Well, maybe Giselle has a grandmother in some trailer park in Hudson.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Unlikely. So, yeah, we were laughing about this saying, I don't think Giselle's moving to Tampa anytime soon. But hey, here we are. And who knows? She might not live in Tampa anyhow. She doesn't have to. Here we are. Now Tom Brady's in. Let's talk about the end of Jameis Winston's time in Tampa, we think, I suppose. No chance he comes back. I don't suppose it's a backup. That'd be strange, although he doesn't have a current home. And the fit. I guess let's just look at the fit, because clearly, Lee, at this point, you only do this if you are now going to load for bear and make a run at the Super Bowl. That's the only reason to do it. You have an old head coach whose faculties I question frequently. just watch a typical game and you'll find three or four reasons as he misuses timeouts, forgets the rules, and often challenges for no apparent reason. You have an older coach who's not as sharp as he once was, but he's really good for the locker room and he's well liked by players. Got it. You have a player who's 43 years old. Sweet Jesus, he's not going to play much longer. We know that. We've already seen some decline in his game, statistically and otherwise. So you have to win, and you have to win right now. And it's the only reason that you would hit the reset button with a guy his age and a coach that age is that you believe your defense is elite, and you believe you can do something to shore up this offensive line to protect the statue that you just brought in to quarterback it.
You know, you're exactly right, and I brought that subject up, and I keep forgetting the number. It's either 103 or 106. I'll just say 103. Jameis had 103 quarterback hits last year, and he's a mobile guy. He's much more mobile than people give him credit for. Brady's not that mobile, and at 43, can a 43-year-old absorb those kind of hits? Now, there's been some speculation from people who've been in the NFL, who've been suits in the NFL. You know, Pat Kerwin and Michael Lombardi. So they've more than a couple times have basically said Arians isn't changing his offense. But that was when the discussion was about Teddy Bridgewater. That wasn't about Tom Brady. You know, so I would like. I know I'm confident Lombardi talked about Tom Brady yesterday. He put out a podcast yesterday. But in a previous podcast, Lombardi, who you know, he was a suit with the Patriots when Brady was there, and he said that's not a fit. I can't see that. That's not a fit with Arians. So I'd love to hear his reaction. I haven't listened to it yet. I've been too busy. I'd love to hear his reaction now. But that you bring up an excellent point, and like I said, I brought that up. And to further boost your thoughts, Jeff, your opening segment was dead on. I thought it was perfect. And I spoke about that with Ira Kaufman, our columnist, JoeBeckSpinning.com. We did a podcast last night. It was both a sad and a great day yesterday. So I don't know. You know, Arians' offense was just about perfect for Jameis. But with Brady, and I've made this point more than a couple times, Brady or no Brady, you know, the Bucs, and Arians in particular, have to have a come-to-Jesus moment and figure out they need a running back. And I'm not saying they have to go out and get a Hall of Fame running back, but they have to get someone that actually gets yards after contact, you know? I don't believe that the Bucs need to go out and get five Hall of Famers on the offensive line for a running back to be successful. Can't they find a running back that can get yards out of contact? That's why I sort of like Cam Akers. Cam Akers proved he can produce with a truly horrendous offensive line. The Bucs are, you know, a lot of people bag on about the Bucs offensive line. I'm not saying they're great, but I'm not saying they were horrible either. A couple of years ago, 2014, Lovie Smith's first year, that was a horrible offensive line. That was downright pathetic. That was when DeMar Dotson was the shining star of the offensive line. that should give people an idea how bad it was. You know, Garrett Wilkes, O'Neal Cousins, Anthony Collins. Oh my gosh, cringeworthy. So, but I do believe Arians, and to speak of your opening segment when you brought me in to speak about this, and I think a lot of people are forgetting this, and I think this is a factor. You know, people are, you know, depending on which side of the fence you're on, Arians has to learn Brady, or Brady has to learn Arians. Well, when are they going to learn? NFL facilities are shut down because of this virus. There's no date, no information coming out from the NFL when OTAs will be held, if they're held. So now the learning curve is shortened. So there's going to be a lot, I get it. Brady's the 43-year-old quarterback. He doesn't need to learn a whole lot. But does Arians need to learn Brady? And now your learning curve is shortened because who knows when they're going to have off-season workouts, OTAs, mini camps. That may not be till June. That may not be till July. Shoot, they may not have it. I don't know. I mean, that's all up in the air now. And by the way, when I said this on Iris podcast that we recorded last time, we published this morning, and I think you could sympathize with this or agree with some of this. I asked Ira. I said, Ira, in middle of December, after Jameis tore apart the Lions, absolutely ripped them to shreds, at that moment, number one, would you dream Jameis was not the quarterback of the Bucs? Number two, would you dream Tom Brady is the quarterback of the Bucs? Number three, would you figure out that we're all quarantined in our houses because of a virus? That's how much the world has changed in just a span of, 4 months?
It's unreal. Crazy. Yeah. Well, there's so much to consider and to unpack here because at that time, what you're talking about was a run by Jameis Winston that was cementing his time in Tampa. It was guaranteeing that he would be back. At that time, the thought was not only would he be back, he'd be signing a long-term deal. He was a guy that, the Colts game happened, and then he immediately followed it up with that performance that you just alluded to against the Lions. The Bucs dropped 38 against the Lions on the road, and he could do no wrong. But simultaneously, what was happening, and I guess it spelled doom in some ways if you're looking at it from Jameis's camp, was that injuries were mounting to his receiving core and mounting, in fact, to his body, his knee and his thumb and everything that was going on. And so you end up really in a futile situation with the Texans game in which he plays terrible, and that was an imminently beatable Texans team. And then obviously they lose in overtime to the Falcons, and we all know how it ended. It was very emblematic of Jameis's time there in some ways, but I also thought completely unfair and also emblematic in what he was up against in his time in Tampa, which was obviously high expectations and not as much help as necessary to meet those expectations, whether it's the line, whether it's the lack of a running game, whether it's a myriad of injuries to where we're literally watching him throw passes to people nobody has ever heard of. I mean, there were guys making catches. We joked about this at the time, Lee. I think we joked about it on JoeBucksFan.com, on the Scuttlebucks podcast. We were saying there was a guy caught a pass. I can't remember his name. Tom, do you remember his name? We looked this up the other day.
Ishmael Hyman.
And I said, I said, who the hell is? I felt like a bad fan. I said, who the hell is Ishmael Hyman? Am I supposed to know who this is? I've never heard of this man. There were people in the stands. There were people who cover this team on a daily basis who went, I don't know who Ishmael Hyman is, but that's who Jameis was throwing to. So we watched all this play out. And then I would marry it in this way. I would tell you that it's in a weird way, for a quarterback guru, Arians was the worst thing that could have happened to Jameis, because Jameis has the ability to make the throws that Arians' offense requires of him. But without a run game, he's asked to throw 45 times a game with less than ideal protection. The world knows it's coming when you're second and long, third and long. And so high risk, high reward becomes a season with 30 interceptions and over 5,000 yards passing and 33 touchdowns. You get the very good, you get the very bad, which turns out to be the thing that sends Jameis packing.
Here's my issue with Arians. And I overall, I really like Arians. I think he's a smart guy. Fans don't care if he gets along with the media. Aaron's has been nothing but fantastic with me, even though he still won't give me his damn cell phone number. Every other coach and general manager of the Bucks gave me his cell phone number. Aaron's wouldn't do it at Son of a Gun, but I still found it, but he wouldn't give it to me. At any rate, here's my issue with Aaron. He's supposed to be this great quarterback guru, and I don't discount that. But this great quarterback guru took a young quarterback. Yes, he got that quarterback to lead the league in passing, second in touchdowns. But he also got this young quarterback to absolutely spike his interceptions. Damn near doubled his career worst. Damn near doubled. And Arians, you know, when Cutter was here, you know, he took a lot of the blame. Cutter's like, you know, I got to do a better job of coaching. We all do. Not once did Arian say, you know what, maybe I'm at fault here. Maybe I'm part of the reason Jameis had 30 interceptions. And I'll never forget, Jameis was asked, what does Bruce Arians tell you when you come off the field after one of your interceptions?
Keep slinging it.
Keep firing.
Yeah.
And Arians to this day, has not said, you know, hey, you know, some of those are on me. Some of those are on me. And it would be, the last two games did sink Jameis. And I don't know if this is fair or not. I've written this. You know, I've always been a supporter of Jameis. But I also tried to be fair and objective. And I don't know if what I wrote was fair. And I've said this a couple times. I know Jameis played hurt. There's no doubt about that. He had a bum thumb. He apparently had a knee injury. And Jameis, to his credit, and maybe to his demise, is like, I'm going to get out there in the field. You're going to have to drag me off the field. If I can walk, if I can stand up, I'm going to play.
Yes.
So I can't blame his bad last two games, his bad games. I can't blame them on injuries, because if he was that injured, he shouldn't have been on the field. Now, whether that's on Jameis, whether that's on the Bucks, I don't know. But I can't blame his bad games on injuries. If you're on the field, you should be able to produce. And if you can't produce, then you shouldn't be on the field. So I can't go there with the injuries, to be fair. And I don't know if that's unfair to Jameis or not.
Yeah, but you can certainly assess personnel and say that he's throwing through a fourth-string wide receiver.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. And you don't. I have done this. You can blame Arians. Hey, you've got two quality tight ends. Why didn't you work them into the offense? I don't know if that's Arians. I don't know if that's Leftwich. I don't know if that's both of them. But you know, you've got two quality tight ends, and they couldn't figure out how to use them. That's not that. You know, if your receivers are shot like they were, you should have been using your tight ends more, and they didn't. And I'm not. I still haven't found out the exact reason for that, but I'm guessing that was on Arians / Leftwich, because Arians, you can go back years ago with the Cardinals, his quote was, you don't use your tight ends because all your money's invested in wide receivers.
Lee, I got a quick question for you. It's Tom now. If Jameis' final act of his season last year was Detroit, so his last two games were the comeback against Indy and then the performance on the road against Detroit, do you think he's extended? Let's say they shut him down right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
So you think he's extended?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And Ira and I both talked about that. We both believed it at the time, and we believe it now, that Jameis would still be here.
Okay.
If the Detroit game was his final act. Yeah.
Okay. So Bruce said when he was at the combine that the last two performances were weighted very heavily in his mind as to, mm-hmm. you know, the direction of moving forward. Doesn't that sound on its face asinine to you, given the situations, the context of those games? No Evans,
a little bit,
no
yeah.
Godwin.
A little bit. You know, it's human nature, we remember the last thing. You know, I will, and I'll ask you guys this. I'm not trying to dodge any questions. But I really believe that if Matt Gay hits one flipping field goal against Atlanta, Jameis may still be quarterback. Because all we remember is a pick six to end the game.
Right.
Well, that wouldn't have happened if Matt Gay made one friggin' field goal. That's one freaking field goal, the Bucks win that game. I will contend it's 50-50 whether Jameis is still quarterback or not if Matt Gay makes one field goal. That's no joke. Now, you should. I guess the fair answer to that is, well, that's the issue. Why isn't Jameis still here? I don't know, you know, because I can't get anybody to ask or to speak about this. I don't know how much the Glazers were involved with this. Obviously, they had the final say. I know they liked Jameis. But Brian Glazer, one of the rare times he did speak, he you know, wants the Bucks to be in the Super Bowl this coming year, and the Bucks are hosting it. Now, did he think that Brady gave him a better shot than Jameis? Maybe, maybe not. What it boils down to, I think, is money. Here's what I heard. Here's what I heard through the grapevine. After the season, you know, Arians was shook up with the last two games, but that didn't make his decision. That wasn't, he still had not come to the decision, no, we can't go with Jameis. What I heard also weighed heavily on the Bucs was Jameis' camp, his representatives, came to the Bucs after the season with contract negotiations, and they started off at $30 million. And the Bucs were like, we're going to look around. They didn't say yes, they didn't say no. They said they were going to look around. So I think it was a combination of the last two games and Jameis' camp allegedly asking for $30 million that gave them pause, and they're like, we're going to look around. And they started looking around, and one of those guys that was available was Brady.
That seems to jive, Lee, with what I was told as well. And I can tell you that I've reached out to people in Jameis' camp, and as you know, over the years I've had – very good information, reliable information from that camp. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I couldn't get a specific number. I attempted to, but it sounded to me, and I said this to Tom on the air just the other day, that I had a suspicion that Jameis or his camp both valued Jameis at a much higher annual salary than the Bucks valued Jameis at. And that the posturing had already begun in the waning weeks of the season. You began to hear some of the comments from both sides. That was the most indignant I'd ever heard Jameis with the press late in the year when they were questioning his credentials with the interceptions. And he was saying, look at the numbers. I'm this close to being an elite quarterback. And he was defending himself in a way he often didn't do. And then also Arians' willingness to criticize Jameis and say things publicly that would not play well, would not read well in Jameis' camp. And so it was the first time I saw posturing from both sides. And it was at that point, I think they were both digging in their heels, that Jameis knew he was going to come to the table, or his camp did, for a certain dollar amount. And he thought that the Bucs would acquiesce to that. And maybe Arians and the Bucs and their discussions valued him at a much different number. And right off the bat, they were going to be, I don't know, $10 million annually apart. And if you are $10 million apart, you're not close. You're not close. And at that point, both sides were free to pursue other options or at least start to look around. And then lo and behold, they got a chance to sign Tom Brady. That's the end of the story at that point, because I think the Bucs needing an uptick in positive PR, ticket sales, a reason to believe, and obviously performance at that point says, let's make a go of it. Let's make a run at it here. Let's put our chips in the middle of the table and try to win a Super Bowl. Yeah, we may be mortgaging the future, but let's see if we can't make this work. And all the way back to your original point, let me just say this. I think there's no way in hell that Bruce Arians can tell Tom Brady a damn thing. I mean, Tom Brady's going to tell Bruce Arians, this is the offense we're running. Look here, old man. I'm not throwing the ball, 40 times a game, 50 yards downfield. That ain't happening. So if you look at his numbers, and just in terms of Brady, that is, his miss rate was the highest it's ever been. It's gone up each of the last 3 years. His quarterback performance overall has been pretty inconsistent the last 3 years. Now, there were a lot of problems last year in that offense in New England, and that weren't his fault. We get that, and I'll look at that as mitigating circumstances. But there's no way Hall of Famer, arguably greatest player to ever live, walks into Tampa and says, all right, Bruce, teach me the offense. That ain't happening.
Especially a guy with six rings.
Yeah, it ain't happening.
That's true. That's very true. What's going to be interesting to see here is Brady going to use these tight ends, Arians, historically, although in Pittsburgh he did use Heath Miller. Is Arians, and like you said, it's possibly he will, Brady will, because Arians going to say, yes, Mr. Brady, no, Mr. Brady, thank you, Mr. Brady.
Yeah.
Well, here's something I don't know if you guys have talked about much at all, but since the Glazer family has owned the team, only one coach has survived two consecutive losing seasons. That's the same guy who got the team a Super Bowl win. Bruce Arians, as much as he, as big of a resume as he has, he doesn't have that on his resume, a Super Bowl win as a head coach. So it's going to be interesting. I think Brady buys Arians. First off, I can't imagine the Bucs having a losing season with Brady. So I really haven't contemplated what would happen if that takes place. But if two losing seasons with Brady, there's going to be a house clean. Bye-bye Arians, bye-bye Brady, and bye-bye Jason White. There's going to be a complete house clean. I can't imagine the Bucs having a losing season this year, unless Brady gets crippled because of a bad block or something.
Well, entirely possible.
I can't imagine that. And I would hope for the Bucs. To me, this is a no-brainer, but Arians is already on record, and I understand where he's coming from. In the old theory, two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. He doesn't want his backup quarterback to be in any discussion of upseating or unseating, I should say, the starting quarterback. Well, I don't think that's going to be the case with Brady. I don't care who the backup is. He could bring Jameis back. There's no question who the starter is, period, in a sense. But right now is a golden opportunity to draft a quarterback high. You allegedly have these great quarterback coaches, you know, Tom Moore and Arians himself, Clyde Christensen as a fundamentalist guy. You have a golden opportunity with excellent coaches and arguably the best quarterback who ever lived for a rookie quarterback to come in, be groomed, zero pressure, absolutely zero pressure of playing and of winning. You could sit on the sidelines, you could learn, you could observe, you could get coached up. This would be a golden opportunity to draft a quarterback high, groom him for the next couple of years, and 3 years, similar to what Rodgers was with Brett Favre, you could have him take over in 2 to 3 years. Golden opportunity. Whether that happens or not, I don't know, but I sure hope so, because again, you will not find a better opportunity to bring in a talented young quarterback and to learn from the best, whether it be his success or his predecessor or his coaches. Here's something also to ponder, and may have been a factor with Jameis leaving. Excuse me. The Glazer family, I know this for a fact. The few times I've gotten to talk to them, they've discussed this with me. They are a big believer in buzz. They're businessmen. Buzz equals money. Now, it drives a lot of football purists bananas. But buzz equals money. They're businessmen. The NFL's a business. Even though technically the league is a charity, they're businessmen. And the Bucs have never and will never have the buzz internationally like they have right now. And also on top of it, and you guys know this as well as anyone, there are no sports right now. Zero sports. The Bucs owned the sports world yesterday and maybe today as well. They owned it. There's nothing else going on. Nothing trumps what the Bucs did yesterday in bringing Brady. Nothing will get them international buzz. You know, again, we talked about Giselle earlier. You know, she's an international renowned model. This has gone all over the place. TV Azteca, CNN, you name it, they're talking about Brady and the Bucs. And I, as stomach-turning as this may be to some fans, I think that was a small factor in bringing Brady the Bucs, not being, you know, to the detriment of Jameis. Bringing Brady here gave the Bucs buzz and international coverage in the media they would never have.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that this changes the perception of an organization.
Overnight.
In a way that not even the Super Bowl in 2002 did. Not even winning a Super Bowl. This changes the perception of Tampa as a landing spot, as a city in a weird way. I believe the ramifications for this are far-reaching. And in that way, I celebrate Tampa's success. I'm happy. But if I'm looking at the football, the next logical step, beyond the buzz, the PR, and all of the excitement swirling about the Buccaneers franchise, is the actual fact that you now have to go and win some damn games. You now have to go and go cash in. There's only one reason and one reason only to do this, and this is to go to the Super Bowl. And if you think you can do that, then now the juggling begins. To your point, it's a perfect time to bring in a young quarterback and have him learn from the greatest who's ever played the game and be under no pressure to have to play for possibly 2 years. Okay, good. That's great. Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to have to block for this guy. And I like Jensen Marpet and Kappa, but that's it. So the interior is good. but our tackles are not. So you got to bring in a lineman. You got to figure something out. You have below average with Donovan Smith. You don't have something there. So you got to find something now. And then in addition, you mentioned it earlier, got to find a running back. Well, I too like Cam Akers. He's a possibility in the draft as well. Well, where are we going to get this quarterback if we need a tackle and we need a running back? And when and how are we going to do this in free agency? And I mean, there are a lot of questions trying to solidify the roster now that you're making this run.
That's a very fair point. That's a sort of a crossroad the Bucs have. Now, do I think they'll draft a quarterback in the first round? Probably not. My guess is a lineman of some sort, whether it's defensive lineman or whether it's a tackle. In a perfect world, Wirfs would fall to the Bucs, and they put him at right tackle. Next year, they have him replace Donovan Smith. And yay or nay, Donovan Smith isn't going anywhere this year because of his contract.
Correct.
He's got guaranteed money, so he's not going anywhere this year. Next year's a different story. And I'm going to take a wild stab here. You know, Donovan Smith has a reputation, somewhat deserved. He doesn't play to the whistle. Now, that didn't happen so much last year because I think the coaches sat on his rear end, basically said, you're playing to the whistle, Donovan. If that happens with Brady and Brady gets hit because Donovan Smith didn't play to the whistle, woe to Donovan Smith, because Tom Brady will be in his face for the rest of the game and probably all week long in practice. And Brady has the cachet. Smith won't be able to say anything to him. You know, so that won't happen anymore. If it does, I feel sorry for Donovan Smith. But I agree with you. I could easily see the Bucs drafting a tackle first round, having him play right tackle this year, having him move over to left tackle to save some money, because obviously a rookie will be inexpensive compared to Smith's contract. But yeah, the first round could go all sorts of ways. They're in a win now mode. There's no doubt about it. So do you draft a defensive lineman? Do you draft a right tackle? Do you, you know, like I said, it's perfect for a quarterback. I don't think that's going to happen, but you can make that argument. So yeah, there's all kinds of ways the Bucs can go in the draft. Cam Akers, what do you think? Third round? Would he slide to the third round? I don't know. But I love him in the sense that he's proven with a bad, I'm not just a bad offensive line, an atrocious offensive line. That gives me hope that the guy can also do well in the NFL when the holes aren't there. But yeah, it's a win now mode. If you put a gun to my head, I would guess they're going to draft a lineman first round, not a quarterback.
Lee, two words. That's what I'm going to say after this. Two words, and I'm going to let out a sigh, and then please expound. Antonio Brown.
No. No, no.
There's
no.
A lot of rumors about that. Jay Glazer was on Fox Radio this morning. And he's saying that's not going to happen, quote unquote. That's not going to happen. Now I know what you're saying about Antonio Brown, and I get what Jeff is saying. No, because he's speaking of viruses. He's a virus. However, there is a however here. There is a but here. If there was ever a locker room where that guy could be put in check, it would be a locker room with Arians and Tom Brady in it. But I'm like Jeff. You don't need Antonio Brown. If they need an outside wide receiver, they could keep Perriman for a whole lot less. And there's zero headaches with Perriman.
Yeah. So Antonio Brown was already in that locker room. Good.
In practice, I don't think it's going to happen. And Jake Glazer's already said that's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, Antonio Brown was already in the most averse to risk culture in the NFL. You had Bill Belichick and Tom Brady.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point, and he's still screwed up.
He couldn't make it work in that locker room. It ain't working in Tampa. And alluding to my earlier point, you don't want Antonio Brown in the city of Tampa. I promise you that. We've seen
much less the roster.
Yes, we've seen way too many good men come to Tampa. Better men than Antonio Brown be broken down by the air of Tampa, my friend. Tampa has a way of infiltrating even the good in every man. So I,
well, you know, that's the Michael Lombardi theory, right?
Is it?
There are too many good. There are too many things to do in Tampa. Hint, hint. Dale Mabry Highway.
Sure, there's too many things in Tampa that lead to major distractions, and it's on every level of the crime scale. So you can look anywhere you want and find anything you want on every level. You can. I know. We all know where to go to get whatever it is that you want. Tampa is. Don't not bring Antonio Brown into Tampa, please. Ain't going to happen.
I love your reaction, Jeff. No!
No. He's a cancer. You can't do it. He's cancer. He's in addition to that, he's a horrible human being. No. All right, well, I guess we'll summarize this. Let me ask you something really quick, and I appreciate how long you've been with us. It's a good day to have this long-form conversation. Do you believe, this is going to sound arrogant as hell, but we both have great sources throughout the sports entertainment world, the NFL as an industry, et cetera. I was texted last night by a pretty big name in the sports world who works for ESPN, and he said, you know this is never going to work, right? And I texted back, hold on, and then we kind of had a back and forth. And he said, good luck to you, brother, but this is a disaster waiting to happen. And this, now, I don't know if that's going to be his public persona, if that's what he's going to say on the airwaves. I'm waiting to find out, by the way. But he texted me that. And it got me to thinking a lot last night about whether or not it would or would not work. I even texted Tom yesterday evening saying I was excited about this. And an hour later, I was filled with remorse. I don't know where to be on this thing. I'm, at this point, I'm all over the spectrum with my emotions. Do you believe this is going to work? And by work, I mean the Bucks win the division. The Bucks, in Brady's time, go to the Super Bowl.
I'm not there yet with the Super Bowl. The division, I could see that. I mean, the Bucks were, honestly, they weren't that far
off. Yeah, they could have won the division last year.
Excuse me, and the division is no question weaker. You know, Breeze is a year older. They're going to be weakened because safety Vaughn, mm-hmm. He's probably not going to be back. The division is there for the taking. I really believe that. The Bucks' defense is better. They got better toward the end of the season. So I could see that.
But you're not sure on
the Super Bowl. Yeah. I'm not there yet. No, I'm not there yet. And you know what? We all have to keep this in mind. When you think of Tom Brady, you don't think of last year. You think of 2010 Tom Brady. You think of 2015 Tom Brady. Father Time is undefeated. The guy's not getting any younger. He's 43. There's no doubt about it. This is a boom or bust move. No doubt about it. Big time boom. Our big time bust. This could blow up in the Bucks' faces, and I referenced this earlier. The Glazer family has never retained a coach who had consecutive losing seasons unless he won a Super Bowl for them. And Arians does not have that on his roster. This 2 years from now, the Bucks could be having a top 10 pick. I really believe that this could be Super Bowl or bust. It really could be. So your source. With a big name at a big job, he very well could be on to something. And the history of quarterbacks in their last couple of years going to new teams and bringing them to glory is very, very limited. Even Joe Montana couldn't get the Chiefs to the Super Bowl. So the history is on your source's side.
Well, yeah, and I'm torn on this. I there's a part of me that I'd say I'm 60-40 in the camp that this isn't going to work in the way that we wanted it to. Now, there are levels of success that I think you can check off here that are going to happen instantaneously. The Bucks are going to the playoffs next year, barring a myriad.
It's hard unless Brady gets hurt. It's hard to believe they won't be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I believe that they are going to the playoff, given what the defense looked like by season's end and given who they brought back.
And that seven teams get in now, by the way.
Oh, that's right. Extra teams get in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, there's almost no chance. If they don't go to the playoffs, then fire Arians immediately.
Should do it right now.
And yeah, I mean, I don't even want to talk about it. I mean, this is crazy.
Hire Jeff McDaniel? Or Josh McDaniel?
Yeah, just do it. Do it right now. Let's be done with it. They better look like one of the elite teams in the National Football League next year. That's the only reason you did this. It has to be that way. And I suspect, by the way, that the Bucks are going to look like one of the best teams in football next year, if we play football next year. But if that happens, I do believe they're going to look like that, because the roster, I never argue with people about this when they would say, listen, Jameis has got weapons now. Oh, yes, he's got weapons. They didn't have a run game to go with those weapons, which would have helped them utilize them to a much greater extent. And unfortunately, towards the end of the year, all those weapons got hurt. That said, Jameis threw them out of some games as well. And Brady won't do that. He's not going to have three or four games that he single-handedly loses. You know, the problem with Jameis has always been this in the NFL. He'll win you games, and he's one of the very few quarterbacks. I say this all the time about the National Football League. There are one or two guys that play quarterback in that league that can actually go win you a game. They go win you the game. They're not reliant on the other team's mistakes or a great defense. They win you the game. Patrick Mahomes is one of those, right? All right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are also, and Jameis fell in that category. He's a guy that could go win you a game. By himself, he could go win you a game. Unfortunately, Jameis was one of the few quarterbacks who consistently lost you a game as well. And I think that at the end, that boom or bust that we keep referencing in regards to this move by the Bucs really does apply as a descriptor to the Jameis Winston era in Tampa Bay. It was always boom or bust.
Yeah, that's very true. And by the way, you used the word look a couple times. Look is the operative word here, because thankfully these garish eyesores
gone. Yeah. Oh, Brady could not wear the clock numbers. We couldn't do that. The digital clock numbers.
Did you see Chris Long's Twitter?
Yeah, he made fun of us again. Everybody does. It's the laughingstock of football. I mean, nobody likes those uniforms.
He said he couldn't see Brady wearing the stopwatch. I can't use the word on. I don't want the FCC coming after you. Use the word, but he said the stopwatch font.
No. I don't disagree with that. We've all hated those uniforms for some time. So in addition to the Bucs just sucking on the field with great regularity, we also had to watch them lose these games wearing those uniforms. Have you seen the totality of what these things are going to be?
I haven't seen them firsthand, but I've seen leaked images, and they look very similar to the Super Bowl Classic. And even Bruce Arians said that he's seen them, and he says they look very much like, he used the term, the Rondi Barber uniform.
Oh, well, those were beautiful. I'm fine with that. Short of going back to Bucko Bruce and the creamsicle, that's fine with me.
Yeah, I'm good with that, too. I am.
Brother, thanks for the long form. It's always a pleasure. We'll do it again soon.
Anytime, Jeff. You know, I love you, and I love Tom, and I listen to you guys' podcast. And, you know, anytime I've got time, my time is yours.
Thanks, brother. Be well. Stay safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right. Take care. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, the website taking up the entirety of the hour. In fact, we're rounding out the hour now, so we'll do so. Anything to add here? You want to take a break, or do you want to just finish up and here we go?
No, I mean, this is going to be a two-segment hour with a little shorty in the front, so yeah. That sounds like some sort of rap lyric from like 1994.
Little shorty in the front, right.
I would seriously, since we're in the silly season, they might as well just elevate Todd Bowles, fire Bruce Arians, and then bring in Josh McDaniels to run the offense at this point. You'd be better game managed. The defense doesn't take a step back, and there you go. I know, it'll never happen, but that's what I'd do.
I really like the scenario you just laid out.
There you go.
Josh McDaniels is not leaving New England to be the offensive coordinator in Tampa. He would leave New England to be the head coach in Tampa.
Okay, get Josh's top assistant or somebody who knows that offense.
Yeah, somebody, yeah.
So because Brady's going to be barking the orders anyway.
No. Again,
he was brought here to do whatever he wants.
And we got plenty of time to talk about this. I mean, this is that kind of show right now. So let's go through some of what we just talked about and react to all of that, because there's a lot to take in there. And it is the story in the sports world, period. It is the biggest story, and that's one of the reasons we both believe Tampa did it. I mean, and I got some numbers I'll give you here in a second that are pretty eye-opening as to how that's going to change financially for the city and for Tampa as a franchise. This was a very big deal
for them. It's good news for the city of Tampa that just lost WrestleMania and revenue for the NCAA tournament and revenue for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, yeah, I suppose that's the good part of it. But
it's definitely good. It's good for the franchise, my man. I mean, in terms of season ticket sales.
Leap me running.
I know. It's Jeff Cameron Show, 97.9 ESPN Radio.
We hope you are enjoying Jeff and Tom on this Scuttlebuck-style show right out of ESPN Tallahassee. A lot of fun, and there's a lot more to come. Part 2 coming up right now dives deeper into the finances of bringing in Brady, and Jeff and Tom go at it, debating whether it's really a good move for the team as a whole. And of course, they are huge, huge Bucks fans, as Scuttlebucks fans know. A quick reminder, we just keep rolling on at joebucksfan.com, and our local sponsors keep rolling as well, even though these are very tough times, as everybody knows. Big Storm Beer, stock up, and of course, Bill Curry Ford is open for business. They are even doing one-on-one appointments. A huge, beautiful showroom, perfect for social distancing, and their service and outstanding operation never wanes. BillCurryFord.com. Enjoy the guys, and stay safe out there.
Jeff Cameron Show, 97.9 ESPN Radio. Thanks for tuning to it. That was a fun hour. I enjoyed that. I feel like the remnants of that leads us down another path. There's more to continue to kind of explore and talk about. I think it's in a weird way. Now, I admit it, we're a little biased given our interest in the franchise, that being the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Jameis Winston being a former Noel, and our relationship with him as well adds to this. And then you throw into the mix the greatest quarterback to ever play the game coming to Tampa, and you have a lot on your plate. Tampa is the center of the sporting universe. Or how about this? It's the national focal point. That's a better way of saying it. I do want to say this. First of all, you can go back and find each of these hours, as always, when we post them on iTunes. And we're not on YouTube today, as some of you have found out. And then, you know, it's kind of fun for us right now to be on the air, to try to help provide what would be a normal work week, right? In a anything but normal time. So thanks for listening. I mean that. It makes it worth it, right? We come in here and you feel like you're doing your part as best you can. By the way, you can email us, jcs@979espnradio.com. You can find me on Twitter @JCameronShow. You can listen using the WTSM app. And again, go to iTunes, rate, review, share, as they say, in the business. Grow it, man. Grow this thing.
You need culture to grow.
Yeah. So, by the way, I looked at this. I was reading an article, and I thought about this. It's interesting. The Buccaneers, as an organization, ranked 31st in home attendance percentage in 2019. They'll now see an uptick in season ticket sales, the likes of which they haven't seen in a very long time. You got to go back to the spike that Dungy helped create. I'm often critical of Tony Dungy, but by winning games and putting a dominant defense on the field, the Bucs began to sell those games out. And then obviously the cherry on top was when we fired Tony Dungy, who deserved to be fired, and brought in John Gruden, who then made a couple of changes to the roster, and the Bucs went on to win the Super Bowl, which we would not have won under Tony Dungy. So that was a great hire and a great moment in Buccaneer history, and the momentum built from Dungy's success on into Gruden, who then capitalized on the opportunity to win a Super Bowl, saw probably the most glorious run in Tampa Bay history, save for 79. And so this, I think, is akin to those times a decade later. I think that what you're going to see is Tampa Bay sell out their games because everybody wants a glimpse of the rock star that is Tom Brady. I can't imagine the number of Brady jerseys they're going to sell starting today. I mean, the organization and the uniforms they're launching next year. Think about how this coincides.
Right. Well, yes. So if they sold Brady jerseys today, they'd be...
They'd be those crappy ones.
They'd be the ones that are impossible because they're never going to exist. But they might sell placeholders, pre-orders. Pre-orders, that's what it is. How about we pre-order tickets, pre-order jerseys, pre-order this and that. The TB12 Buccaneer hat. The merchandising is going to be off the charts. Plus, not only do you get, you know, the gate, but then you're also going to get how many Sunday night, Monday night, and Thursday night football games.
The Bucs are going to be the center of the NFL, and they never have been. They're an organization that just saw an uptick in relevance that very few of us can ever wrap our mind around or imagine. That just didn't exist in Tampa. It couldn't exist. Only Brady could make this exist. It's true. I mean, he is that powerful at this point in his career. He's that iconic. It's what he represents as much as a central figure in the league as it does what he can provide for them on the field. It's above and beyond all of that. Long term, if you think about what you're describing, which is national attention for the first time in, 10 years.
Outside of last year's November and December, where everybody kind of jumped on the Winston train just for entertainment purposes.
What they're looking at long term is if they go on to have success and win games, there are formative years for kids that now those children, as they become adults, are Buccaneer fans. They buy jerseys. This is what happens. They're long-term fans.
Those formative years will be precisely two, I think.
Yeah.
Well, one way or the other.
If they make a run, those 2 years turn into 15 to 20 years, maybe a lifetime's worth of diehard fans buying stuff.
You think that helped with Kansas City when they got Montana?
I did. Yeah, I think so.
You think it had a lasting legacy of kids who, grew up Chiefs fans?
I think the Chiefs fans were already really loyal. They were one of the original organizations. They were in the early Super Bowls. I think they had a great fan base to begin with, so they didn't have as far to climb. I remember when Joe Montana went to the Chiefs, and I know Joe alluded to it just a moment ago, Lee DeKemper, that is. He didn't win a Super Bowl. He got them to the playoffs, and they were instantly relevant, and they were on Monday Night Football all of a sudden in a way that they hadn't been in many years, and he did go and win a playoff game, and I do remember watching him have success.
It frustrates me, though, because this is such a short-term move, and you're going all in for a short-term move, and it screams to me. And I get it that there's empirical growth you can see in year one and year two of Brady with sales of all kinds. But what are you parlaying that into? Because you're going all in. You've gone from building to all in like that. This isn't a move where you extend Jameis for 2 or 3 years, or you franchise tag him and you say, all right, it's still an upward trajectory. And if you look at the next 5 to 6 years of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers franchise, you love what you see. You've got cheaper, younger players on the defense. You've got a young, up-and-coming group of receivers. I know that Mike Evans is in contract too, but he and Chris Godwin are definitely only entering the primes of their respective careers. It's not like Evans is going to be over the hill in 2 or 3 seasons. They're going to be really good for 5 years minimum together.
Godwin for sure.
Right. Well, especially in the Bruce offense, which now he's going to have to play a different role in a different offense.
But I feel like he can adapt in a way that very few can. He'll adapt better than Evans will.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Evans is just going to be the over-the-top threat.
Yeah.
Now, it did work for Brady with Randy Moss, but Brady needs the arm strength in order to get
there. Brady was a considerably younger man during those seasons. Yes.
At least he'll be in warmer weather for most of the season, so that'll help with air distance and obviously the looseness of his body. You see how it impacts Tiger Woods with his back? Well,
Yeah, I it's interesting with Brady. I took a long look at the down-the-field throws, and it really is symptomatic of the problems they had with personnel last year. He just couldn't take shots down the field. It wasn't that he couldn't throw the ball down the field. It's that they chose not to because nobody could get open.
Yeah.
They had no reason to go down. We'll know early on whether or not he's got the arm strength requisite to hit Evans 50 yards downfield the way that you saw Jameis do this past year.
Right, which he came leaps and bounds from week one to week 17.
Massive strides, massive strides.
But the problem I have here is usually when you build something, the payoff is for a handful of years. The payoff is for close to a decade, right? That's the goal. You're looking for sustainable success. And now you've gone all in, trusting that a 43-year-old isn't just, deteriorating at a rate greater than his greatness. That's what we've traded for? I mean, geez. It might work, man, but it's not like you've got suited ace king in a hand of hold'em. It's not like you have pocket queens, and that's what you're going. To me, this is like a 10-9 suited hand, and you're going all in on that. It may work. You might win. There is a probability. But it's not as big as it sounds when you say Tom Brady comes to Tampa Bay. There's a lot that needs to happen.
I think there are things that have to happen. I think it can be something that works in the short term, and the Bucs could go to the Super Bowl. You just want a shot. You just got to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, at this point, you're playing to get to the final game.
Would you have a shot with Jameis on a one-year franchise deal the way that we were trending entering the season?
To win the Super Bowl?
Well, what are we talking about?
To get to the Super Bowl?
Yes.
I feel like they were moving in a direction that they could win the division. In fact, I would have picked them to win the division with Jameis going into next year. And I think they would have been one of the better teams in the NFC. I think they would have been them in San Francisco again, obviously. I see that happening. I think the Titans are going to be good again next year, by the way. I'm looking around at teams that would be in the playoffs. Sorry, that's an AFC team. But you know what I
Titans
mean.
Titans had no problem giving Tannehill $90 million guaranteed.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Phillip Rivers got 25 yesterday from the Colts.
That's, I don't know what they're doing. I would have signed Jameis if I were the Colts. But that said, going through the league, I don't know, man. I feel like the Bucs would have been one of the better teams, yes. I don't.
So Brady gives us a better chance to make it to the Super Bowl in 2020 than Jameis does. You think point blank that's true?
If we bring an offensive lineman in and improve a tackle, I think that's true, yes.
What if you did that for Jameis?
Well, again,
would you have a better chance than with Brady as the quarterback?
I think the franchise would have been in better shape long-term to keep Jameis, without question. That's a no-brainer. You're right.
But what I'm saying is make the upgrades that you demand, that you must have for Tom Brady. Make those upgrades for Jameis. And who has the better chance of taking you to the Super Bowl?
I think Brady.
I disagree.
I don't. I think Brady. Now, I am worried that we're going to see this diminished version of Brady that we saw last year and come to realize that it might not have been solely about how bad that personnel was. But based on what we know that personnel to be from a year ago, I'm guessing the reason that you saw the decline in the numbers and he had the season that he did is directly correlated to how bad that personnel was.
The one thing I'll say, and I've read Bill Barnwell's piece today where he goes through like the facts and the fictions of 2019 for Brady versus trends.
Yeah.
One thing that he said was fiction is false. He gets his numbers, he manipulates them in the wrong way. So he talks about against pressure.
Oh, right.
And
right,
this is something that Brady's going to see in Tampa is pressure.
And he's
going to
throw the ball away.
He said that Brady was 28th in passer rating and 28th and 24th in passer rating QBR respectively. So he's bottom whatever.
Yeah, you know, he did not have a
quarter
good year,
of the
lead period.
Against pressure. That's true. Those numbers are true. He says that passer rating-wise, Brady was 10th in 2018. And while that might be true, I went to look at Football Outsiders for some pressure rate analytics. And according to Pro Football Focus, Brady was 22nd in the league against pressure in 2018. And he was 10th when there wasn't pressure. So a huge difference. It affects him. And it's affecting him over a longer period of time. And to assume that Orlando Pace is out there in his prime
in order to change
this thing fundamentally, and to assume that Brady is going to run his offense solely, that Bruce isn't going to want at least some sort of melding of the two.
I don't think
those
Bruce
are
two
has, big, huge butts.
I just don't think Bruce has a say in any of this. Bruce is...
Then fire him.
Well, okay, fine. But I think that Bruce is going to have to completely stand down. You do not bring in Tom freaking Brady and have him adapt to your offense. You just don't do it. This is not going to happen. He's going to run whatever the hell he wants to run. He's going to come there and say, Bruce, you know that I have been uber successful for 20-plus years throwing off a play action. You got to protect me, and we got to run the damn ball. And if we can do that even a little bit, I'm the best there is. So I tend to think that while he's no longer the best there is, he is a top 10 quarterback. If you run the ball and let him throw off a play action, he will be great. He will be fantastic. He'll be accurate. He'll take advantage of the weapons. He'll throw far fewer interceptions than Jameis does. And our offense will look different, but it will be very, very good.
To come back to one quick poker analogy, I'm not excited about the potential of what this could be,
yeah.
But my disdain and like, I just feel so down in comparison to maybe the excitement I'd feel on opening day, because right now I feel beaten. And if I win this hand, it's going to be because it's a bad beat. I feel like, all right, well, I'm all in. I feel like I've got something. And then the other guy flips over his cards and on paper, I've lost. If I win this, it's because I get lucky. But you still get excited when the cards come out.
Yeah, you still win.
Because the cards still cut. And you can still win.
The money still counts.
And a bad beat is a win nonetheless, and you take your chips, and that's fine. But I feel like that's the position the Bucks are in a position where if you win, it's because you did it for the wrong reasons, and it's a bad beat because you're taking an all-in risk out of nowhere.
You don't like that the decision centered around a short-term coach who's making a run for his own legacy and doing so at the risk of damaging your franchise, the one you love and have rooted for as a child, irreparably for the next 10 years.
Correct. all for the chance, like a loss in the NFC Championship game and a loss in the divisional round. Thanks for playing. You're not making the playoffs again until 2030.
Right.
That's what I see.
You don't like that he's mortgaging the franchise's future for his own gain, which ultimately we benefit from if it works, because you don't think it's going to work, and therefore his selfishness and his age factors into a ruination of a franchise.
Now, the Vikings got unlucky when Brett Favre came in because it was Bounty Gate, and that game was ridiculous.
And he played great.
But you know what? That set them back for how many years? They've only since recovered with Case Keenum before Kirk Cousins came in and signed his contract. They came out of nowhere. How long did that take? It took another decade. Yeah, they made the playoffs with Christian Ponder, but they weren't doing anything at that point. They weren't a franchise of significance. I see that happening here as the probability, the likelihood of events to come.
Well, okay. If you'd like, let's look at it from worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is we can't protect him, okay? And he gets hurt. And now we don't have Jameis, and Ryan freaking Griffin rolls out there. And we saw last year he can't play.
Or Jacob Eason or some ridiculous thing like that.
Yeah, yes. So worst case scenario is this doesn't work at all because you can't find a tackle, you can't protect him, and or Brady's diminished in some way above and beyond what we realize. Mm-hmm. And the Bucs go, what, 2-14?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
If you are...
Then you know exactly where you're
going. If you're 2-5 and he's hurt, you know exactly what to do.
You got to lose every game, and you go grab Lawrence, and you're fine.
That could have worked with Jameis.
Well, but either way, I mean, you got to go eat Lawrence, okay?
There's a
silver lining.
But here's the problem. I felt like in earnest we were building towards sustainable success, and we just traded all of that because we wanted to start, you know what, Tom Brady.
That's
a problem.
You alluded to the Barnwell piece, which I would encourage everybody to go and read.
There's ESPN. Good stuff in there. There's a lot of good stuff on there.
I'm going to reference some of it when we come back. It's the Jeff Cameron Show, 97.9. ESPN Radio. There's another aspect of this, too. You know, can you imagine what the fine folks, I know none of us are going to lose sleep for the fans of the New England area who've had more good fortune than any fan base has a right to in a lifetime over the last 20 years, whether that's the Celtics or the Bruins or obviously this franchise that's won more in a way that nobody else ever has in the history of the National Football League.
There's also a team called the Red Sox that broke a curse.
And then kept going. But if you'd like to pity them, they've lost Mookie Betts and Tom Brady in the span of several months.
I will pick the dirt up off the ground and throw it in their face and then maybe pity them. But I got to do that first. Got to enjoy it.
So Barnwell wrote a piece on all of this, assessing Brady, the player, the Bucs, why the franchise did what they did, and you know, areas of concern, areas where they'll succeed, all that stuff. But towards the end of that, and you alluded to it, I know you read it, but for our listeners, he had an aspect, he had a segment entitled Why I Love This Deal. And I'll read directly from it. I am not trying to insult you. I know you're all capable of reading, but perhaps you're driving. Perhaps you're at work. Perhaps you can't look at this right now. So here you go. In general, anytime you can add a starting caliber quarterback without needing to give up significant draft capital, it's a good move. The absolute worst-case scenario is something like the Brock Osweiler situation in Houston a few years ago. And the Texans were able to get out of that situation by using draft capital after one disastrous season. The Bucs will forego a compensatory pick for losing Sue by signing Brady, but the top quarterback on their roster before Wednesday was Ryan Griffin. It's fair to expect Brady to be diminished from the guy he was, say, 5 years ago or even 2 years ago. It's also impossible to separate how much Brady has declined from how much the infrastructure around him fell apart. There's no data on what a 43-year-old starting quarterback is supposed to look like or age like. Brady could drop off precipitously and be unplayable by the end of the season. He could also take another step forward and look like the guy who was good enough to win the Super Bowl just 14 months ago. Putting yourself in Arians' shoes, though, was there an option without flaws on the market? Winston is a roller coaster with seemingly no end. Ryan Tannehill never made it to the market. Philip Rivers also slipped during the second half of 2019. Teddy Bridgewater's only effective rep since he suffered a serious knee injury came in what amounts to quarterback paradise with the Saints. Andy Dalton's resume as a difference maker amounts to one season with a great line and great weapons way back in 2015. Every other veteran available profiled as a borderline starter. And as a guy who turns 68 in October, Arians doesn't have that kind of time to develop a new rookie quarterback. It wasn't clear that the Bucs would even be in position to draft one where they sit at 14. Of the quarterbacks who were available to the Buccaneers, Brady had the highest short-term floor and ceiling. For whatever off-field benefits Brady will offer the Bucs, no free agent signing is going to move his team closer to a Super Bowl than Brady with the Bucs. Even if it fails miserably, this team had a chance to sign the greatest quarterback of all time and fill an enormous position of need on its roster.
All of that's true, except for the part where he says he has the highest short-term ceiling of the quarterbacks available. That's wrong. Jameis does.
I don't know if that's true either.
It's 100% true.
No, I think Brady will outperform Jameis' season next year. I think in with the Bucs that he would, and that's what they're betting on. I believe they're right.
He'll throw for 5,200 yards?
No. He's not going to be asked to run that offense. To me, it's less about those yards. That's proof positive Jameis can play in the league. That's proof positive that somebody should sign him and that they're going to get a great young talent, and it's why we both mourn the idea of Jameis leaving Tampa Bay. But it doesn't mean he would have had a better season than Tom Brady, because I don't think Tom Brady comes anywhere close to 30 interceptions if you put him on this team last year. So I also don't think they're going to run the damn offense.
He also wouldn't have made it to week 7.
There's a good chance that's true,
You know, Jameis had his torn meniscus by that point.
Yeah.
Brady would have been like Bridgewater, losing his legs, gone.
It would have been a bad situation. But I don't think that's the situation we find ourselves in now. I think that defense will be a lot better. I think they're going to go out and get a tackle. I think that they'll have some semblance of a running game. The offense will change to, I think, adhere to Brady's current skills. And one of those certainly is unquestioned good decision-making and accuracy when he has time. And I just don't, you know, this is the year you make a run at it. And if you look at it that way, okay, I can stomach this. I'm a Jameis Winston fan. I think Jameis Winston kind of got a raw deal this past year. Not kind of, he did. And I think he made the most of what they were asking him to do with no run game and minimal protection from the tackle position. I think he took a beating. He utilized his weapons well. I think, obviously, the yardage and the touchdowns gave you a chance to win. The interceptions gave you a chance to lose. And so he was a boomer-bust guy completely. I think you're removing elements of that now. Long-term, I'd love for Jameis to be the franchise quarterback for the next 10 years, and now that's gone, and I hate that. But I have to confess, if the Bucs go to the Super Bowl, this was worth it.
They got to win it. It's not the NFC Championship. They've got to win it. We're in for now.
I think you got a chance to permanently change the view of Tampa Bay as a destination for free agents and what the franchise represents. If you go to the Super Bowl and you win a couple of divisions in these next 2 years, I think you're set up to have long-term success, because I also think they're going to bring in whoever Brady's successor is going to be. I think at some point you got a chance to do that.
Well, so are they going to teach him a different offense while Brady runs his?
No, I don't know what they're going to do. But Bruce Arians wasn't going to be here 3 or 4 years from now anyhow.
Well, Bruce and Leftwich are now obsolete as far as I'm concerned.
No,
they're going to be there solely to hold Tom Brady's play sheet and call Tom Brady. The play call for Tom Brady.
But you also will admit, because you thought this was a strength of his, that Bruce has been great for that locker room. And great in creating culture and relating to players.
That's all that's left. That's all that's left for him to do.
That is all that's left for him to do. He is a figurehead coach in that sense, but sometimes that works.
And screw up challenges and screw up timeout management. That's all that's left for him to do. No, honestly now. I mean, because if he tries to run his offense, and that's what they pitch, let's just say that when they do this press conference, webinar, whatever the hell it is, and they say, you know, we're going to run a version of my offense combined with
what
Thomas
learned.
Well,
he's got to say that to save face, I'm sure, but okay. Let's see what they actually run.
Well, I brought this up a couple weeks ago, and I don't really care because it is a bottom line business, but you're trying to develop a coordinator too. protege in Byron. That's done. You just traded in Byron Leftwich's development.
Well, Byron Leftwich is going to learn a little something about the Tom Brady offense.
Then he's no longer a Bruce Arians protege. He's a Tom Brady protege.
That's fine. Hey, listen, he could further his career being a Tom Brady protege. Everybody can get better because of Tom Brady. That's what they're betting on, that everybody's going to become a better player because of Tom Brady. And I do think the way that Brady holds people's feet to the fire, and we were begging Jameis to do this.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't having that nonsense now. You're going to do what you're supposed to do.
That is the biggest upgrade
across
the board. There are two upgrades that I can say definitively this is better than Jameis. Number one is the accountability is going to be through the roof. Jameis was reluctant to take control, and he was told apparently by Bruce and Jason Light last year to
Don't worry about leadership.
Don't worry about leadership and cut it loose. Doesn't matter how many picks you throw. Those are two amazing messages to be delivered last year, only to not get yourself
re-upped. In many ways, they sabotage Jameis Winston's chance to stay in Tampa.
You're damn right.
I completely agree with that.
And the fact, and this will be hopefully the last time I say it, but not at bars, when we can go back to him. But the fact that if Jameis shut it down after Detroit and he gets re-signed.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because I completely agree with you here. If we're sad, if we're just in the camp of losing out on an immense talent who we think has a chance 4 and 5 years from now to be one of the top three quarterbacks in the league, like we're going to be watching from afar as he kicks ass somewhere, okay? If we think that's the way this is going to play out, and it could have been in Tampa, right? And we're sitting around and playing the game, what could have been?
Where he goes is now team three for me, by the way, but yes.
Yeah, I would just tell you this. I 2 years ago, and you know this, I advised, now, this is going to make me try to sound self-important, and I'm not trying to do that. But you all know, because you watched it play out, I got pretty good sources when it comes to Jameis Winston. Let's just put it that way, all right? And I advised said source at that time to shut it down. I said, this is going to negatively impact the way you're viewed by the entire league, by coaches, by agents, by the media, because you're such a competitor, because you refuse to sit when you can stand, even if it's not what's good for you in the instance, that you're going to go out there and play hurt and play to a level that's not commensurate with your talent as you force your way through this injury to be there for those guys, to be there with that locker room, to be there for your teammates. And instead, you've got to look at this as the brutal business it is, because they're going to assess you in that manner. They're not going to say, well, that's a plus in his corner. He played hurt. He played hard, even though he could have sat, even though we know he was at 65% of what he could have been. But he's that kind of teammate. He's that kind of tough guy that rallies the troops and inspires everybody in the locker room because he refuses to give up when he can play. That's not the way they're going to view it. Every time you throw an interception because of that injury, every time you can't let it fly because your shoulder, you can't raise it above parallel because you're in that kind of agony.
This is Dirk's final year.
Yes.
What you're hearkening back to.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. They're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. They're going to blame you. And every time Dirk calls for a 60-yard pass to start a game, even though he knows you can't move your arm, they're not going to, after the game, say, Dirk, why did you do that? You know Jameis is injured. They're going to ask Dirk about why he called that play, and you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt because Dirk sure as hell isn't going to tell him you're hurt. He's going to roll your ass under the bus. We knew this. We've seen him do it, and it happened again last year. I talked to somebody in that camp and said, you've got no healthy receivers. You got a broken thumb. The Bucs can't go to the playoffs. Why are you playing? The response I got was, if he can play, he's going to play. He will always play. That's who he is. I said, toughness isn't at play here, man. Everybody knows Jameis Winston is tough. Anybody that watched him in college knows that he played through one of the worst high ankle sprains we've ever seen. He was in agony, and he played at a really high level with that effed up ankle. Go on to the NFL career where he's had a multitude of injuries because they can't protect him, because they don't have a running game, because he takes an ass beating. And he continued to play in the wake of all of that, and it did affect his performance. And I saw no reason for him to take the field against Atlanta, especially. I was even advising don't take the field. Now, I'm not an advisor. I don't have that kind of weight. I get it. I'm just talking with somebody who, you know, I'm just talking with somebody. Let's just put it that way. And I'm saying, my man, I don't even know why you got to play the Texans. I know what's at stake there still, but
yeah.
I mean, the Bucks aren't winning the Super Bowl. The Bucks aren't going to win a game in the playoffs. What are you doing?
No, no.
And so my point was, you're only doing yourself a disservice because you're going to play through really significant injuries. But moreover, now that you're hurt, everybody else is also hurt. And you
could do that if you got four more years on a contract.
Right, right. My point would be, we didn't know whether they were going to re-up him. And at that time, I knew that they were going to unfairly assess over those last two games in the same manner they were the previous 14. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You cannot weight those games equally to game 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. You can't. He didn't have his receivers. He was hurt.
And the fact that the last two games are a reason enough for somebody who could make a decision in the front office, because Bruce is making that decision. It's just, I can't wrap my mind around it because it's nuts. It's like driving down the Selma 85 miles an hour, swigging your Jeff Cameron Yeti mug to the point that you're facing the roof or the ceiling of your car.
Yeah.
And you're saying, hey, he's going to get us where we're going. Don't you worry. He's driving. He's got it. No big deal. Eyes off the road. No big deal. He knows where he's going. I feel like we have an insane person at the wheel of the car.
I don't think he's as insane as you do. I think his ability to make prudent in-game decisions has been affected by age. I don't like to have people in really high positions of authority in their 70s, God forbid, close to their 80s.
You, of all people, can't stand when they're past their time decisions.
I can't stand
this guy is like the prime example.
Yeah, but what he did do instantly was change the culture in the locker room, and it was a fractured, leaderless, rudderless place to exist prior to him getting there. And that he can still do and will do, and I do think the accountability was just ratcheted up yet again this offseason because Tom Brady, and you're admitting this too, is not going to have that nonsense, man. Every rep of every practice that they do get to participate in is going to matter for something.
Yeah, the biggest plus you could say is he's hired one of the best offensive coordinators in football.
Yeah.
The guy just happens to still be playing the game.
Right.
The question is about integration, assimilation of what system to whom.
Yeah, well, we don't know that yet.
And Lee's point, I think, is quite valid, too. With OTAs being eviscerated, I mean, they're going to be, right, before we even get into minicamp. And let's say that training camp starts late. Are they going to delay the season start? I mean, how far does this trickle-down effect bleed into the NFL?
Yeah.
Because it's critical that Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Scotty Miller, and frankly, what I'd do, honestly, I'd find another valuable asset, see if we could trade up for another top 50 pick. If this is what you're going to do, this receiver class is so loaded, go get you Jerry Jeudy. Go get you one of those guys who can operate over the – screw Antonio Brown.
Idea. That can never happen. No. Don't do that.
A lot of NFL people are saying, Brady reached out to Brown I want you to be.
Nope, shouldn't happen. That's crazy. What the hell
is
wrong with
him? Get you a Julian Edelman that you can get and pay second-round money right now, and go get that guy. Because you're going to have to work. I mean, he's starting from scratch just like Godwin.
It's very evident that we missed your boy from Clemson.
Humphreys.
We missed Humphreys.
But not at that price.
No.
But we
missed him. Yeah, we did. Jameis missed him a lot. Yeah.
So you've got to find.
Reliable, yeah.
You've got to find that guy for the offense. You have the tight ends. You already do.
But I will tell you now, again, one of the great benefits from. So the reason Brady didn't make throws down the field last year was because he didn't have anybody to go up and fight for the ball. He didn't have a receiver that he trusted to go make plays on 50-50 balls. So he's got two guys now that he can absolutely entrust.
Sure.
Implicitly. And he's got a third guy if he gets Brate and anything out of Howard, God forbid.
Yeah.
You got weapons now.
Yeah, he's got a crash test dummy in Brate.
Yeah, who will make the catch.
He doesn't care.
That guy's got heart.
Right.
And he's smart.
OJ, he's going to have to develop himself because Bruce has regressed that career single-handedly.
Right, and this is why going away from that offense may be beneficial to the personnel in Tampa Bay, meaning that you can get something out of the guy you just took in the first round a couple years ago.
OJ
Howard has to – you know damn well that it's – now listen, it's always delicate when we start talking about guys this way, so I'm careful, but I don't think OJ Howard is very smart. Football-wise, I don't think he's a very smart guy. And that evidence seems to have been shown on the field. I'm just talking about on the field. I don't know. He could be a Mensa off of it. On the field, that guy is dumb as a post. He struggled to figure out any element of the offense last year.
If you throw it out the window, then he won't be crying about it. OJ, I didn't understand it anyway. So what do you got, Tom?
Yeah. No, and this is where Tom can take that body.
Yeah.
Which is uniquely gifted. I mean, he is a difference maker in terms of linebackers can't cover him, safeties can't cover him. He's got it. I mean, he's a problem. Mm-hmm. And so now maybe you get to utilize that. I'm sure Tom will have to simplify some things for him, but it might work out.
But this is what it is now. You just sit in the chair and you say, all right, if we don't win the whole thing the next 2 years, then what was this all for?
Well, that's
ticket sales?
No, you're right. You're doing it. You're doing it just to win in the next 2 years.
And to sell tickets and to sell jerseys. And that's what they're trying to do.
Well, but
they're trying to latch on to his star to take the organization to a place that it hasn't been in quite some time. I know you're arguing that ever since ever.
Ever.
With social media, if you make any kind of move now, you're going into unprecedented territory. But still, I think that's what their primary goal is here. Let's go make as much money as we can off of Tom Brady, and if we win the whole thing, great! But I feel like the priorities here are about the money and the prestige over the ultimate success on the field. I think that's what this move is. For the Glazers.
Oh, I think the Glazers look at this very differently than the way you and I look at this. You're right. Yeah, I think they're looking big picture money. I think they're looking at... but I do think it can further what Tampa Bay represents in the National Football League. I do believe that could be a permanent shift.
You got to win the whole thing.
You
got to
win.
Favre got to the doorstep in Minnesota, and people have forgotten that he ever played for that organization.
Yeah.
If he won the whole thing with them, then everything's different.
Minnesota still holds much greater clout in the National Football League than the Bucs ever have. I mean, it's one of the oldest franchises. The Purple People Eaters were successful. They got to Super Bowls. Granted, they're 0-4, but they've been four times. You know, the Bucks.
I'm just talking about Favre. If you look at his legacy and because you want to be attached to the star, right?
Yeah, but see.
But Favre with the Jets and the Vikings, I mean, are just like one little snapshot in his career.
Jets thing is weird, but here's what I'll say, though. That's true, but when you got Favre, You're doing the same thing by getting Brady. You believed that Favre could still play. They believe Brady can still play. This isn't solely about imagery.
They were right that he could still play.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and the Bucs are betting that Tom Brady can play, and I think he can. You don't. I don't think. I don't know.
I don't think he can play. No. There's a lot to unpack with that.
Yeah,
but it's against the option of Winston another year in the system when looking at the trends are empirically true that get so much better in year two.
Yes, yes. My guess is, again, though, that gets thrown out the window because, again, we're not going to run that offense.
Right.
So now,
but what's the cost of the metamorphosis in terms of wins and losses when you only have 32 games? I think that's the amount that you're promised
34
right
now that we have 17-game seasons plus playoff games.
Very fair. So you got 34 games of shelf life that you're guaranteed, provided that we don't have a blindside ACL like he, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you can't play the game.
You can't play it that way.
You can't play it that way.
So with his career, you've got 34 games to work with. How long does the metamorphosis of the offense, once again, for these receivers who have now been through three offenses in three years,
yeah.
How long will that take?
Well, this is part of the bigger issue. They're missing – we're going to miss dates. We're going to miss OTAs. We're going to miss – we think.
Right. So it's going to bleed into the season.
It is very problematic. That aspect of this is very problematic because – if you're going to have to transform the offense into whatever, an amalgamation of whatever this is, right, I got you. That is going to take time for people to get on the same page. This is where I give Brady the benefit of the doubt, and he has been a brilliant player, and he has a brilliant football mind. I don't think anybody would argue that. I do think that it ratchets up how quickly you can indoctrinate the offense and get it learned. Especially he's at the helm teaching the receivers and, you know, all of that.
And can I say what clouds my talking points here is Bruce's in-game management and his flippant comments publicly that damage whatever progress he's making in different areas of the organization. If he pushed all the right buttons.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He challenged in the right
then
places.
Then you would have probably been okay with this to some extent?
Yes, because here's how I'd argue it. I'd say he is willing to put down his offense and outsource a new offense, bring it in, and say it's bigger than me, and let's run somebody else's offense because this is an all-time great, and it's going to help us get where we want to go. He's doing what CEOs, good ones, do.
Yeah,
they empower
surround themselves, right,
to do the job the best of their ability. I would argue that. But the problem is, like, half the regular season games feature moments with Bruce looking absolutely clueless, and there's about 10 to 12 more press conferences at different settings where you go, I don't know that he's got all his marbles. This is a problem.
Well, here's hoping that Todd Bowles is the next head coach at Tampa Bay. And what I mean is, like, after
run
this
that defense, get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, but maybe after this year.
Should be right now.
Well, you can't do that.
I know.
But I'm with you. But we could be moving in that direction, buddy. We might be all right.
Well, but then when Brady's gone, I mean, you want Bowles as your head coach
sure.
at that point?
I love him. I do. I love him. I love what he does in teaching that defense. We just have a defensive-minded head coach. Better hire a good offense coordinator and let's go from there.
Yeah.
But they exist. I mean, you could do that. You're either going to have an offensive-minded head coach or a defensive-minded head coach. So, whatever.
All that progress in this offense last year. Godwin was unbelievable
but
as the featured player.
But he was unbelievable the year before. He's
But
really
he was in the Larry Fitz position.
Yeah, he's a great player. He's going to be great no matter where he is or what offense he runs. He's just a ball player. He is, and we know that.
But he had figured it out, and it's like, all right, that textbook?
It did take him 14 or so games. I mean,
Right.
It took him a long time. That was frustrating. In some ways, as good as he is, he screwed Jameis, too. There's a lot of people with Jameis' blood.
That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. Godwin screwed him. Evans just deciding not to run routes. Remember this? Remember Evans last year?
Yeah.
Having games where he just didn't feel like trying?
How about before halftime of the Carolina game in London? You catch that with what Jameis did in the second half.
It's a dime.
Yeah. That's one of about six or seven examples.
Well, and O.J. Howard, every week, here you go, whippity-doo. I'm just not going to run the route, or when I do catch it, I'm going to throw it to you.
Also, just with Carson Palmer coming out and saying the offseason, I fully expect Jameis to flourish next year. Yeah, somebody who's been there, seen it, and he knows where to look, where his head should be. I mean, like little nuances that Carson could see that we can't. Where is Jameis looking before a throw? Because he knows what the play is.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
God, dog it.
Jeff Cameron Show, 97.9 ESPN Radio.